And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, the podcast about best friends turning into lovers, exes who you love to smother, and putting your mask on before helping others. We're your hosts. I'm Allie.
And I'm Mia. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a rom-com review podcast where each week, Allie and I try to answer the question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time? And if we have to scroll and troll on social media until our thumbs are numb to find the answer, we'll do it.
Now, we'd like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero / Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we've had this week with a famous rom-com hero or heroine. And I can start us off this week. You know, I am bending the rules a bit. Is this movie a rom-com? No, it is not. But I have rewatched it recently, and so it's on my mind. This week, I am channeling Anne Hathaway's character from The Devil Wears Prada. Not a...
We count it.
Not a rom-com. Yes, I am channeling Andrea. Just because in first act Andrea, you know, there's first act Andrea, and then there's second act Andrea. And first act Andrea is just a sweaty mess in a sweater. Her hair is everywhere. She's like holding thousands of bags and it's just a mess. And I saw a woman crossing the street today in a skirt suit with like stiletto heels and her hair in a slicked back neat ponytail. And I thought, I ever be that woman? I want to be that woman so badly. But will I ever be her? I don't know. But anyway, I've just been so busy and all over the place this week. And I like was – my printer broke and I needed like – to print things. And so I went to Kinko's and then all of their like automatic, like their like machine, the self-serving machines were broken. So I had to wait in a long line to print a bunch of stuff.
No.
And then I was like holding a stack of papers, walking down the street. And then I had to pick up some other things on an errand. So I have like two bags, a stack of loose papers. And then I get a call from my manager and I know it's an important call. And so I'm like holding these bags and clinging onto these papers. And I like answer the phone and I'm out of breath and horns are honking in the background. And then I see this woman in her beautiful skirt suit with her slick back ponytail and stilettos. And I went, oh God. I want to be her. Woman. So that's who I'm channeling this week. First act Andy, hoping to some. I mean, I guess you want to be third act Annie, who, you know, is kind of like above it all.
But that's something I'm channeling
this week.
That put together woman that will always want to be. I felt that way. I feel that way when I travel all the time, when I look insane and I look at someone who looks incredible and I'm like, I don't understand what's happening.
The same thing happened to me recently where I was like, I should buy new suitcases so I look good when I travel. And I went, what? No, Allie, you have great suitcases. They work, but they're all like colorful and they don't match. And I was like, you should get black suitcases because that will make you an adult.
No, I get it. I bought very expensive suitcases. It's very stupid. But you know, I'm just trying. We're just like chasing that white buffalo of the like put together woman being like, will I ever be her? So I get That's very relatable.
I have a question for you. Just a little tangent. Mm-hmm. Would you ever wear heels to the airport? Sometimes see women wear heels to the airport and I think they look incredible. But then in my mind, I'm like, I couldn't do that to myself.
I agree. I'm so confused about where they're going because I see them too. They're real. But I would never. And it's not even in a judgmental way. It's like, I'm so ill-equipped at traveling. The idea that I would also be on like small stilts
while
I'm doing it. No,
but I want,
I'm lucky if I'm wearing even like remotely a denim. I don't think I've worn like a denim pant to travel in like 10 years even. I don't know what to do about travel. I don't know what to do about it. Except you just spend a lot of money in suitcases.
Just as a social experiment, I want to like really just do myself up before I go to the airport and see if it feels good.
Sometimes Allie and I go on trips together. So maybe if we go on a trip together and then in the next 2 years, we will like, we can be like, okay, we're going to wear like heels
and makeup and
see what happens.
Yeah. But yeah, that's who, sorry for that tangent, but I have to know. That's who I'm channeling this week. who are you channeling this week, Mia?
Well, I just think it's very relatable, Allie. I feel that way all the time, especially when I'm traveling. And this week, and honestly, I'm kind of your soul sister, not far from you where you are. I am sort of act one. What is her name? I think her name is, it's in Jenny Slate's character in Obvious Child. And I think her name is, I want to say it's Deborah, but it's not. It's Donna. Okay. I'm channeling Donna. I am channeling Jenny Slate's character, Donna Stern, from Obvious Child. And because that's a movie about sort of like a woman in her late 20s who sort of like doesn't have it together. And she's like an artist. And I am like in this state where it's like, and Allie, I'm sure you got this, where it's like as actors, it's like sometimes you have like an acting job and sometimes you don't. And there's just like a lot of flux where it's like, oh, you'll get an acting job. And then that's your job for a moment. And then it's over and then you have to re-enter the workforce. And so I'm sort of like in an in-between week where I'm just like not in the workforce and I will be rejoining the workforce next week.
Yeah.
But, and I just feel so like childish. Like it's like I have to do my taxes. I have so much adult stuff I need to do. I need to read this like Suze Orman finance book I bought. And I just like find it all really overwhelming and I just feel like not an adult and I, you know, I'm just like, what do I do? And I have this dog, you know, in the movie Donna's Pregnant. I have a dog who I adore, but who, when I'm like sort of overwhelmed, it's also, it's like, oh, what am I doing? I feel so crazy. So that's what I'm channeling. I'm sort of like in that like lost adult phase. And next week when I rejoin the workforce, I think that will honestly give me some structure and I can sort of get back on. And I'm going to use the next few days to like energetically try to recharge and prepare for it. But just like a weird in-between stage where you just feel like, you know, even though you are working, it's like you don't feel like you are and you just like feel like weird and everyone's going to work and you're not. It's just really odd. It's just really odd. So that's who I'm channeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Mia, I'm right there with you. Gosh, it's a feeling I know well where it's like, you know, sometimes I'll be like at a Target at like 11 buying a tank top for an audition. And I want to like be like, I have a job and I'm buying this for work. I'm not just shopping here at 11 to buy a tank top on a whim. I'm an adult. I'm an adult, although I am wearing sweatpants right now. I swear.
Yeah. It's like such an odd career path that can just make you feel like really like weird. And so,
that's
how I feel right now. And I'm going to feel more grown up when I start another job next week, but and I'm just going to try to enjoy the free time, but it's hard. It's hard when everyone else is sort of like, it's like, well, we're going to work today, Mia. What are you doing? And you're like, not doing that. but I'll go to work soon. I'll go to work soon.
But to then you can be like, yeah, well, I actually had to leave the country to go to work. And I worked, you know, 16-hour days. You know what I mean? Like back to back and
my
weekends. So
sort of like went to a little time vacuum for 2 weeks. Worked my little heart out, survived on Diet Coke and coffee, and am now recuperating. And then I will go, I'm going to go take care of children next week, and I'm honestly looking forward to it. But that, honestly, Allie, thank you for that perspective. That is very helpful, and I really appreciate you. And speaking of people who have not fallen in to an adult life path yet. Let's get into our movie discussion, shall we?
Excellent transition.
Thank you so much. This week we watched the 2022 rom-com, I Want You Back. In this film, Emma, played by Jenny Slate, and Peter, played by Charlie Day, meet in a stairwell when they hear each other crying. They discover that they've both been recently dumped and that their exes have already moved on. The two fast friends decide to help each other break up their exes' relationships so that they can win back the loves of their lives. However, during the process, they start to fall for each other.
Wouldn't you know? I want you. I Want You Back was directed by Jason Orley, who also directed Big Time Adolescence, and it was written by writing team Isaac Apteker and Elizabeth Berger. And fun fact, that writing duo also wrote Love, Simon, another popular modern rom-com. They're kind of like a new rom-com writing duo. This movie came out in 2022, so I don't really need to ask either one of us. This is the first time we've seen it because I think it came out this week. I think they're still doing press for it.
Oh my God. It's been sort of like around. Yeah, absolutely. This is brand spanking new. It's like one of the newest ones we've done since like maybe like Love Hard.
I know.
Hot off the presses.
Yeah, hot off the presses. Gonna get some fresh hot takes here. Mia, what are your kind of first thoughts or broad strokes on this rom-com?
Wow.
Because I know you're a really big fan of Obvious Child, another Jenny Slate rom-com.
I love Jenny Slate so much. I'm a huge Jenny Slate fan. I really like Charlie Day. I really like Gina Rodriguez. I'm a huge fan of the casting of this film. I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
This movie was so interesting. I think it was, this movie was extremely interesting. I again find myself asking myself, what is happening with the lighting in this film? It was like there's something about streaming rom-coms where sometimes it's like tonally there's something like odd about the lighting. So this is one of those ones where and maybe it's because it was shot during COVID, I don't know, but where the lighting was like a little odd to me. I don't know why I'm opening with that.
I agree with you.
Ellie, did you? Okay, I feel crazy. I'm sorry, I'm becoming so nitpicky about lighting. What do you think happened?
Okay, here's what I'll say, I swear I have more, you know, deep thoughts about this movie, but the lighting was insane. It was so harsh. You could see all of the fine lines on everyone's face. Everyone's face, what? You could see the fine lines. And let me tell you something. It's good lighting. You can have fine lines like that and you won't see it because you are brightly and softly lit. The lighting was so harsh where I was like, oh my God, like,
yeah,
how could you do that to these actors? That's so cruel.
Right. It's like you made these like extremely attractive actors, which is like, it's fine. And it's like, hey, if you're going for a grounded look, that's one thing. But I don't really feel like that's what was happening. I was just like,
no.
It's like, what is like, everything is like lit. Not even like a soap opera, like almost like it, like almost like reminded me of the film The Room a little. I don't know if that's like so unhinged to say. Like, I don't even know what it totally reminds me of, like quirky horror movies. like it's like a quirky horror movie type of lighting that I'm just really not used to. And I was like, how is this happening? And honestly, it created an unsettling vibe for me.
Yes.
Where,
yes.
This I was really getting sort of my Best Friend's Wedding vibes during this film, where I was like, I love these actors so much. I think the conceit of the movie is really fun and relatable. Yeah. And then I just think they're all playing like pretty bad versions of themselves. And specifically Jenny Slate, I was also like kind of annoyed that I was like, Charlie Day got more redeeming qualities, and Jenny Slate's character was just like truly just like being a baddie. And at one point it's really funny, she was like, even like Gina Rodriguez is like, I can't believe you're trying to make me sleep with this horrible person, and Jenny Slate's character is like, yeah, I'm not being great. And it's like, yeah, you're being like really bad. And it's like so it's like a little jarring, and I don't blame it, because I do think that is an element of rom-com, is like sometimes they're just movies where people act very poorly because of love, and it is interesting and it is true, and it's like an interesting self-reflection. But it was like that combined with the lighting, combined with the score. The score was like old-timey.
Yeah, there's like Jimmy Durante in this score. You know, that's what,
what'd
like,
you say? There was what?
Jimmy Durante. He was in this. He's like, he did like basically like all, like all, I think like he did a bunch of the When Harry Met Sally, and he's in a, he's also in the You've Got Mail, I think, soundtrack as well. Like those like early kind of classic 90s rom-coms, those classic ones, has, you know, that's what this score reminded me of, where like these early classic rom-coms.
You're so right. And I think it was like, there was something about the combination of like that and the lighting and the content that like made it just like very dark tonally for me. And I liked it. I liked it. I enjoy watching it. I love the actors. I think the story was very interesting. But I'm like, I was very, I just thought it was a very odd combination of rom-com elements to incorporate. And I do think you're right, Allie, where it's like, yes, it was very much musically like those films. And I'm like, sort of like, ooh, I wish I could have softened the movie with some like 90s hits instead. Some like semi-sonic. Some like, ooh, some like little There She Goes. I don't know, Allie. But yeah, Allie, what was your first impression of this film?
Yeah. My first impression was the casting was great. It was basically like, the casting director's like, okay, what are all the most popular TV shows on right now? Let me take the best actor from all of them and put them in this movie. I mean, we have Charlie Day from, you know, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. We have Jenny Slate from Parks and Rec. We have Gina Rodriguez from... Jane the Virgin. We have
Manny Jacinto.
Yes, from The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all, just like such great comedians. So great casting. The like conceit. I love the conceit of the movie. It's very rom-com-y, mm-hmm. very like super plotty, which I love, like a bunch of secrets being told. Love it.
Yeah.
It reminded me
of The Poster's Ideal.
The Poster's Ideal. it's like like two, like a couple like making a heart with their hands, and you see Jenny Slate and Charlie Day looking like horrified at it. it reminded me of a Patricia Highsmith story that was then adapted later by Alfred Hitchcock, called Strangers on a Train, where two strangers meet on a train and then they agree to murder each other's people, that it's ruining their lives. And kind of like this movie, sorry, spoilers, one of them is good at murdering and one of them is bad at murdering. And I think you brought up
such
really,
a good point.
I think you brought up a really good point, Mia, in that like, yeah, it kind of sucks that Jenny Slate's character, the female character, has to be crazy and like more diabolical, and all Peter, Charlie Day's character, has to do is just be, he like Peter's way of breaking up Jenny Slate's ex with his new girlfriend is to become friends with him and just get to know him and try to convince him to go back to Emma, Jenny Slate's character, versus what Emma has to do is she has to get Peter's, like basically steal Peter's girlfriend's new boyfriend. And so it's like she has to do like way more
just like engage in a sexual act.
It's just doing a lot more for him. And so, you know, that kind of bumped me a little bit. But I think the aspects of this movie that I really appreciated was like how it dealt with like social media and breakups and how horrible it is. Even when you've broken up with someone, you still see them on your phone every day is really, really hard.
Oh my God.
I think
that's,
it deals with
such a good point.
Oh yeah. I think it deals with some like cool themes as well, where like, where, you know, about like being with like how like the right person will bring like the right things out in you. And I thought this movie was, I thought the themes were good, but I also thought that like the tone shifted kind of in a crazy way where like the first two thirds of the movie were very like plotty and funny and slapsticky and very like, you know, at one point Jenny Slate is singing the song Suddenly Seymour in a middle school play.
Can we pause on that for a moment? Yeah. I do not want to quit your momentum though. Do you want to finish your thought and circle back though?
The only thing I'll say, and then yeah, we can go right back is,
I'll circle back later.
You know, there's like that kind of comedy happening, really funny stuff. But then like it takes this weird shift in the third act where everything gets really like grounded and real. And like Gina Rodriguez's character and Charlie Day's character have like a really deep conversation about like breaking up in relationships and settling. And there's so much in the movie of like them trying to get their partners back. And there's not enough, I feel like, of Jenny Slate and Charlie Day falling in love.
And by the time
we get to the end, like they never even kiss. It really bothered me that they never even kissed. And like,
totally.
And I feel like so much of the movie was them. I don't know. There wasn't enough of them falling in love. But that being said, let's go back to this moment that happens earlier in the movie where Jenny Slate is trying to win over Charlie Day's ex's boyfriend. She's trying to get in the middle of them. And he's a theater teacher and Gina Rodriguez is an English teacher that's helping him with the play. And Jenny is somehow in the play.
Yeah. And there, I will say like I completely agree with the tonal shift and it did not work for me. And I do wish there was more Jenny Slate and Charlie Day falling in love. I think I wish there was more of them being, I wish there was like just more redeeming moments for them. And I will say the Suddenly Seymour part where, okay, so Jenny Slate, this whole thing is insane. And there's a lot of really like weird stuff with them hanging out with children, which it all is fine, but it's like, it's just like,
it is weird.
There's an abundance of them like hanging out with children in a way where they have to be like, it's not weird. Like we're not being weird. And it is, they're not, it's just, it's a lot. But I will say, I was so confused about the tone. And then we just cut to this scene that is so long where Jenny Slate, who has been volunteering to help set up the middle school production of Little Shop of Horrors, comes to the tech rehearsal and is the woman who's playing Audrey, I think.
Yeah.
Is gone. And so
by
Jenny
woman,
Slate,
you mean middle schooler.
Child. I mean, absolute child.
Absolute child is sick and
homesick
Jenny's
with me guy.
Yeah.
And then they ask adult woman Jenny Slate to get in full makeup and costume and sing Suddenly Seymour. And I will say, although the tone was inconsistent, I laughed so hard during this scene because it was so crazy and it went on for so long.
And she sang the entire song.
Sang the entire song with like an 11-year-old and then kept being like startled by the 11-year-old in a very funny way. Being like, ah, what's that? And I will say that like, regardless of how inconsistent the tone may have been, I think whatever sort of fueled that was an element that was very redeeming in that I laughed so hard. That scene was so crazy. And I do like that element of like, oh, you've gotten so deep in your lie, you have to do this.
Yeah.
But it is wild. And
yeah,
I mean, yeah. And I do. Oh, wait. And Allie, sorry. Do you have anything on that?
Oh, just that they do such a good job of setting it up that like Jenny Slate, it's clear, like she early on, she like lies. She's like the premise is like, they need volunteers and they ask strangers to come volunteer at this middle school, which
at
is
a middle
so,
school
at a middle school. So weird that strangers like, okay, would be invited
sure,
to volunteer.
Maybe.
And she lies to the director because she's trying to get into his pants. And she's like, I was in this when I was in high school and I played, you know, Audrey, but it's all a lie. And so you're expecting her to, when she has to sing the song, to bomb. And I thought it was such a fun reversal to have her absolutely nail it and just do so well.
And I think it's smart too, because Jenny Slate is so charismatic and so talented. Yes. And I feel like that's where she really got to soar, was like that type, like her banter with the children, her doing that is like when Jenny Slate's doing her best.
Yeah.
With a character that isn't like quite like as dimensional as we might like for an actress that talented.
Yeah.
And then at what point were you making about the tonal shift towards the end, Allie? I had a thought on that, but it was really great.
Tonal shift, I feel like it happened, I think, sometime after. So, like, this – I think it either happened around the time where, like – so Jenny Slate is successful in breaking up Peter's ex played by Gina Rodriguez and this like theater teacher. And he like, once they're broken up, Peter then kind of breaks up with Jenny as a friend, or breaks up with Emma as a friend. And is like, you know, we can't really be friends anymore. And then, they all like, find each other again on this cruise ship. Like Jenny gets invited by her ex to go on this cruise ship, on this wedding. Yeah. Like her ex is getting married. And they're all there because Peter's there because he became friends with Emma's ex, and Emma's there because Emma and her ex ended things on good terms. And then I think right after that, there's a lot of it's like the big speech scene where everybody says like, oh, you know, like this is, we actually know each other. Peter and Emma know each other. And then, you know, we were trying to break you guys up. And then I think the tone shifts when Peter is in the hotel after that, you know, the truth comes out and he's talking to Gina Rodriguez's character. And it's a very long scene. A very long and grounded scene about important, you know, themes, but it's very long and grounded and serious. And then the airplane scene is also very strange. And it felt like a reshoot because the airplane looked so low budget. Didn't the airplane look so low budget to you?
It did. And it was, I hate it. I don't hate it. I mean, I'm so sad that it was so unrewarding because I thought it was a fun setup in like the second act. They go see Con Air, which is one of my favorite movies. And they put this thing out there. I love Con Air so much. When they saw Con Air, when they were seeing Con Air, I was like, I cannot believe seeing Con Air. I love Con Air so much. If you've not seen Con Air, please watch Con Air. It's fantastic. And they sort of talk about this thing where Jenny Slate's like, well, you got to put on someone else's. I always thought, which to be fair, I thought was like very contrived, where it's like
it felt pretty forced. Knows you to,
right, where it's like you have to put on your own. Mask first, your own oxygen mask first. And that's sort of like a classic metaphor that we all tell each other in terms of like, it's better to like, you know, make sure that you're doing okay first before you sort of like try to take care of others or seek out partnership. Mm-hmm. And it's like this metaphor. And you hear that come and you're like, okay, well, maybe there'll be something like that. Probably not an oxygen mask itself, but perhaps something like that will pop up later in the film. And then cut to like a very low budget plane scene where it's like they've had a big fight. They haven't had a lot of reconciliation. And then the masks fall down and you're like, oh, okay. So we're just going A to A. We're just going to do a full. Yeah. Okay. I should have known. I absolutely should have known. And then, And then he puts on her mask first and she's like, thank you. And there was just something I felt unrewarding about it. And I can't quite put my finger on it. But I agree, Allie, it had to do with like the lack of love building and the no kissing. But I was just kind of like, maybe. I was like, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, well, they didn't really have. It's crazy because he had this huge, long reckoning scene with like Gina Rodriguez, his ex. But he never really had that with Emma. It was just like all kind of silent. And it was basically they have this big fight on this boat. Then like during, you know, Emma's ex's wedding. And then the scenes after that are, you know, Emma amends things with her ex and Peter amends things with his ex. But then they never amend things with each other, Emma and Peter, in a way. And it's just like this weird nonverbal scene. And as soon as he puts the mask on her first, it cuts to the credits. There's no kiss. There's no like big speech. There's no wedding singer song where he plays a big song and shares how he feels. God. You know, it's
what
just
a good example of a really satisfying
Plain, coming together scene.
That's a really good point. I do think it's like a combination of like not enough legwork between them. Cause I do think what he does to her is very terrible, where it's like they're both engaging in like the same abhorrent behavior. Mm-hmm. And then Jenny Slate's presents is much worse. And then he benefits way more than her from it. And then betrays her in a very dishonorable way. Mm-hmm. And then he makes amends. He like figures out Gina Rodriguez, and Jenny Slate makes amends with her ex. And then by the, it's like the combo of like the lack of like building there, the lack of resolution between the two. And then I think also that the metaphor still doesn't quite track for me, where it's like, I'm like, I don't know. I still think the healthier thing is to put on your own mask. Like,
Mia, you are absolutely right. That is the healthier thing to do. Because, and it's also what they do in the movie too. Like Jenny Slate puts on her mask metaphorically by like learning what she wants to do with her life and taking care of herself first. And I think that's like a weird, it felt like a last minute tack on. You know what I mean? Where it's like, they're like, what should, it feels like they wrote this script and they're like, what should the final grand gesture be? And then they're like, oh, let's plug in this line earlier about airplane masks. And then we'll put them on an airplane.
Right. And it like doesn't that really wasn't in the script at all. And then they like put it
and
in
then they added up. It just felt a little tacked on versus like, it didn't feel true to their characters, because what the characters did is like their main connecting thing is that they like supported each other in their dreams. Like Peter has a dream. It's a very, really sweet, specific dream. I really liked Peter's dream, which was like,
loved that. Oh my God. That was very specific.
Was really close with his grandmother, and he wanted to, but she like lived in a really shitty retirement community, and he wanted to build really lovely retirement communities for people, which I think is so lovely.
It's such a wonderful take.
Yeah. And it's a Jenny's really character, Emma, was like, when he said his dream, was so supportive of it. And then he's so supportive of Emma and by buying her this book, which I then bought after watching the movie.
What?
Yes, it's a real book.
What? The Find Your Own Parachute?
Yeah, What Color Is Your Parachute is a real book.
Oh my God, Allie, I also was like, wait, that looks interesting. What is that? Yep, oh my God, does it look good?
It looks so good. I'll let you know. I'm going to read it and let you know how it is.
And I'll borrow it.
But he like gives her like a book about helping you find your passion, because she's like, I don't really feel like I have one. I feel lost. And it's how they like, they're very supportive of each other and each other's dreams. But neither one puts, you know, stops doing their dream to help the other get theirs. You know what I mean? It like doesn't track mm-hmm. with the, if you really love someone, you put their needs in front of your own. It's like, no, if you really love yeah. someone, you take care of your own needs and then also support them in theirs. But it's not like, I don't know. You're right. That metaphor yeah, doesn't
like
track.
All he did was buy her that book, which is like fair. Yeah. That's a gesture, but it's like, and it's still, it's like kind of like, it's weird. Yeah. Where I'm like, I almost would have rather there been a conversation where maybe like, cause it's also, it's like, there's no need for him to do that on the plane, right? Like they're fine. You never feel like they're not fine when he does that. And I almost wish there had been like a conversation where he's like trying to put it on her and she's like, I'm fine. And he's like, but I want to, you know, it's like, and even her desire as a child to like, she dreams of putting an airplane mask on her love first. Even that is like really unrelatable. I think it's like an extrapolation of like, I think it's an extrapolation of when little girls like imagine their wedding day. Like it's kind of in that realm of thinking. Yeah. But I think it's like a completely unrelatable line of thinking where it's like, no, the one thing you always learn is to put yours on first. No little girls. I mean, I don't know if you dreamt of growing up and putting that on your partner first, maybe. I mean, let us know. I don't relate to that. It doesn't feel
real. It doesn't ring true. Yeah. It feels like, exactly. It feels like it writing instead of
crack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I almost wish it could have been like a more interesting conversation about like, what is the right choice, you know, and like, and then like a struggle between them of how to do it like that. I think that would have been an interesting conversation yeah. around like relationships and dependency and like, what is the right balance and who knows? But yeah, it was odd. It was just an odd way to end it. And I think you're completely right, Al, where it's like, I think we didn't see enough of them falling in love and being kind to each other. And I think like Charlie Day got a lot of redeeming moments, like with the older woman and with his dream. And I feel like Jenny Slate's character got a little bit of the shaft.
It's yeah.
like, she's just unpleasant.
And like, she's a homewrecker.
Yeah. And it's like, my favorite moment was when, in addition to Suddenly Seymour, is just when she was like, yeah, I'm not being great. Like that was my favorite moment. Cause I was like, yeah. Like she's like being selfish. She's like, would have loved to like a little more of that. And I don't blame. Obviously, I don't blame Jenny Slate for that. I think it's like a character thing, and I think she did very well with the character, and I adore her. But yeah, it was just an odd tonal situation throughout.
It started off really good, though. Like the movie starts off, and it's
fantastic.
It starts off with them both getting dumped, and the dumping scenes are great. One is at They're classic. They're pleasant. One is at a child's birthday party. Charlie Day's character Peter gets dumped at a child's birthday party, and then he loves kids and he wants to be like a father, which I think is like kind of like a sweet depiction of a male lead. He like really gets along with like Gina's nephew. And he's like, after getting dumped, he's like, can I still sing happy birthday? It's just, it kind of cuts to him crying while singing happy birthday to a child. And it's so funny and dark. And then Jenny Slate gets dumped at brunch and she doesn't realize she's getting dumped. And it's also really fun. And there's this awkward moment with an Uber where like, he's like, should I wait for you while your Uber comes? And then her Uber cancels and she's like, please just leave me. And
she just starts like keening,
just like, oh God, it's so good. It's just like that kind of like, ugly cry, sob, and then it just cuts to a montage of them, an incredible breakup montage of them, like her like holding pillow, like I think maybe she's holding a sweatshirt and Charlie Day is like holding a pillow and they're just like crying, and then he throws a glass at one moment.
That scene, oh my God. I mean, I loved it. It's classic, but Jenny Slate rubbing the sweatshirt laid out in her boyfriend's side of the bed. I mean, look, it's dark, but I was like, that's really sad. I was like, that really gets me. Like, that was really intense.
Holding on to like pieces of your old lover's clothing and like smelling it and being like, their smell.
Oh my God. Like, that is dark. But I get it.
But they they did a really cool thing in this like breakup montage that was like, they cut in between like, they like formatted it to look like an Insta story. So you would see Insta story yes! moments of like them with their original people. It's just like Instagram perfect. Like, they're just having the time of their lives. Everything is perfect. It's like when you're on Instagram and you see people post stuff on Valentine's Day and you're like, wow, look how perfect they look. Look at that beautiful, flawless relationship. And then it would cut to them single, mourning their breakup. And there was this awesome, awesome one where Jenny Slate was at a baseball game with her ex, and he caught a fly ball, and then he handed it to her. And you see them in this Insta story just having the time of their lives. And then there's a hard cut to her later with that baseball, hitting it with a meat cleaver. And it's so good. And the movie, and I think like the classic, like, Jimmy Durante, like, rom-com song was like playing under that opening sequence. And that was like, man, this is funny and modern, and it has a really cool insight into social media and kind of like how it's fake and weird.
Yeah, and they had that old timey music and an old timey font, like, for the title.
And it started with this really great energy. And so I think that's kind of like why I was harping on the end so much, is like, it had such a good beginning and I was so excited. And then it, you know, it kind of lost a little bit of steam. But I thought that intro was really great.
How I feel about it.
Yeah.
I feel the exact same way about it. Oh my God, it was so long. And I agree with you, Allie, where my notes just got progressively more like, okay, what's happening? Because, like, I was like, oh my God, the beginning was great. I thought that her breakup was just like classically rom-commy in the best way, where she's like, I'll have another lover's punch. Like, you're the best boyfriend in the world. And it's like, you just know she's going to get dumped. And it's great. And then, God, what did I write down? I wrote, okay, I can't read this. It's like, through 10 stones, cool. Okay, I don't know what that says, but I liked it. And then, like, there was, like, I thought it was so funny when he was breaking up with her, when one of the reasons he was breaking up with her was because she lives with college students. And she was like, well, they're pre-law, so they're basically lawyers. Like, I just think, like, there was so many interesting specifics. I agree. It started off strong, where I was like, oh, the old-timey music is fun and the old-timey font is fun. And look at these great big breakup set pieces. And then by the time we were in the stairwell, the lighting got a little weird. And I was like, is the lighting not going to settle out? Because I feel as if I'm in like a horror film now. And then it just sort of, and then I was excited when they saw Con Air. And then I did think that their banter at times was really funny. The banter between the two was very funny. But I just wish that we had spent more time on they're developing their love, some more like moments there.
I want a moment of them getting caught in the rain and she slips and he accidentally catches her, and then their mouths are really close to each other, and then it's like, are they gonna kiss? Like, we were just missing one of those moments. I accidentally saw you naked and I liked it, you know?
Exactly. Because we had a sort of a forced version, which I just don't think works, which is when they're trying on clothes and he like likes her in the dress and it's like, okay, not quite. Yeah, we need a little bit of rain. We need a little bit of like farcical, like, you know, like Charlie Day gets stuck in the hope chest during the sex and that wasn't very rewarding. I'm like, maybe they both could have gotten stuck somewhere together.
Yes.
In a romantic way, hiding from Noah or Gina Rodriguez. Like that, I think, like there was like, we just missed a little bit on that end. And I just want to have a workshop on lighting with everybody.
Just talking about lighting really quickly. I agree, Mia. Here's what I'll say about lighting is that, you know, movies are, you know, there's like the script, which is, you know, kind of like a verbal storytelling, but we watch, you know, movies because it's visual storytelling. And if for rom-coms like this that are very much like fantasy, kind of like super heightened, you know, larger than life rom-coms, you want lighting that feels cinematic. Like this is definitely like, it's a movie, you know, this is not very grounded. And so you want kind of fluffier, brighter light, and you want that Nancy Meyers light, you know, you want it to be kind of like a dream. And when it's distractingly bad, it takes you out of the story.
I was so unsettled in the stairwell, and I just never felt relaxed again.
I do want to talk about
the wedding.
Yeah, the wedding was. I want to talk about the stairwell scene. I do think it's a pretty great meet cute as it goes.
Oh, Allie, it is a great meet. It's perfect.
It's pretty perfect. You have two people working in the same building, never met, but it's, you know, Jenny. Oh my God, it's so funny. Jenny Slate, just been dumped, works as a receptionist to an orthodontist. It's like booking a meeting.
Oh my God, the jeans.
And they're jeans. She's like, so funny. It's so effing funny. She's at the front desk. This girl just comes out. She's wearing braces. She looks horrendous in them. Her teen boyfriend is like, I think you're the most beautiful woman in the world. No matter what you do, I will always love you. And Jenny Slate is just like watching them from the front desk and then is so heartbroken that she has to go into the stairwell and just cry. And then she's sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And then from the stairwell, someone, I think she even says like, I have no reason to live, or she just says some like really dark stuff, and then somebody goes, are you okay? And then it's we see Charlie Day is also in the stairwell crying, and then he's like, and she's like, I'm fine, and that Jenny Slate way, and then he's like, you have mascara all over your face, and then he has toilet paper on his face, and then they are talking about how they've both been dumped. And there's a really great cut in this scene. God, the first half of this movie is so good. I don't know what happens
in
the second half.
There's this drunk karaoke thing is so great.
So good. There's this incredible cut where they're like talking about how they've just been broken up, and they're like, okay, so I guess we'll just go back to work. And then one of them goes, unless you want to, and then hard cut. They're drunk singing karaoke during the day. And it's
that's
so
a perfect place to put them.
It's so good. They're so funny in that scene. And then, yeah, the movie kind of slows down and gets weird and long. You just want to see them more together. I guess I just wanted them to be together more because they're so funny together. And they have such a good kind of like comedic, you know, tête-à-tête.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. Yeah, I wanted more of that and more of like them having because the promise of the premise is that they're going to have so much fun trying to break up their exes together that they fall for each other. And it just never quite, I mean, suddenly Seymour was very fun, but it's just like, there's just not enough. Like, this feels like a spin. At first, I thought it was a refreshing spin on the like, oh, you know what we'll do? Let's pretend to date to get our exes back. Like, that's where I thought it was going. And then it was like, no. And you'll try to break up Gina Rodriguez and Manny Jacinto, and I will befriend your ex. And I was like, wow. What a fun twist. And then I was like, you know what is missing is that these assignments are not together.
Yes. That's it, Mia.
Right? That's it. Yeah. That's it. Why that's such a great trope is because they have to build this stuff together.
Yes.
So then by the end, you're like, oh, well, they're meant to be together. Where in this one, it's like, well, you spent a lot of time apart doing.
Yes. Oh, you're so right.
And it's, I hate
they're missing that.
I hate to recommend. Yeah, such
it's
a
that
classic
time together. Is that
yeah? I think it would just need a little more of that. But an element that there was still lots of fun peppered throughout. Like,
yeah,
I want to also one moment that I was like jaw on the floor was So again, another, I don't know why there's so much of like adults with underaged minors in this film, but there is a scene where Charlie Day's character and Noah go meet these girls from this club and end up going back to their home, and you find out they're high school students and Pete Davidson's there and he's funny. But I will say my favorite, and it's like this whole big set piece, but my favorite part of it is when the dad comes home and it's Ryan from the OC. Did you catch that, Allie?
Yes, I did. I was like, flawlessly.
He looks incredible. He looks way too young to be the dad. Like, yeah. And it's this funny bit where he's like, you and I are peers. Like, I honestly thought Ryan from the OC, whose name I do not know. Let's look. It's Ben something. Okay. His name is Ben McKenzie. Yeah. Ben McKenzie. I thought Ben McKenzie was one of the best parts of the movie. When he comes in and he's so funny and he's like, we're peers, like, what are you doing? Like, I thought that was a fun and surprising twist on that. Yeah, he's aged fantastically. He's awesome. Yeah, I thought that was funny. I'm not a huge Pete Davidson head. I thought Pete Davidson was really funny in this.
He was also he worked with this director before in Big Time Adolescence, Jason Orley and Pete Davidson also worked in Big Time Adolescence together. I always think it's that nice when people work together. Yeah, it was like another one of those like coming of age movies that came out, I think, in like 2019 maybe. And I think maybe Machine Gun Kelly was also in it. A lot of tall, thin, tattooed white boys were in that movie.
Yes, that makes sense. It's a theme.
Pattern. Maybe a type.
I do like that. I love a working relationship, like with actors and directors, yeah. And I do like the body of work. It was such an interesting movie. I'm like, yeah, you should absolutely watch it. It's just not quite, I would say it doesn't quite deliver on the premise. But the actors are lovely. And I think maybe it's like a film that was like, oh, why don't we like rest on the charisma of our actors' laurels?
Yeah.
Instead of like having some structural stuff provide some of the like bones of it. And I think that it just unfortunately didn't quite add up in the end, but it's like, it's still worth a watch. It's still like an enjoyable.
Yeah. You'll have a laugh and I love all the actors. Everybody is really, really funny in it.
Everyone's super funny. The Suddenly Seymour bit is like my favorite. It's what I honestly like, would want to watch again.
Yeah. I think I'm going to rewatch Little Shop of Horrors because I was like, man, love that song. That song is so good. Have you seen Little Shop of Horrors recently, Mia? It's so fucking good.
Oh my God. Do you think we could go see it somewhere? Do you think it's like playing somewhere?
Do you think maybe anyone's around doing Halloween? It? I'm sure around Halloween. I watched it around
maybe 2022. Maybe.
It would be fun if they had something like with Rocky Horror Picture Shows, they show that at a theater in Santa Monica.
Because we could just watch the movie, Al. We could just watch the movie together. Okay.
We could. Mia, it's so good. God.
I know. And that, yeah. Okay. Well, we should watch the movie. And I did think that part was the funniest part of the movie. It's so crazy. Any final thoughts before we move on to tropes?
I think we covered it all. I would say worth a watch. It's probably a good laundry movie because you watch the first half and it's really funny. And then, you know, as you kind of get into like hour 1:30 or like an hour and a half in, you can start folding your pants.
Doing your taxes, opening TurboTax, being like, what is this number from? Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing one of my W-2s. Where is it?
Exactly. Like, what was that job? What was that payroll company called? I agree. I really value it in that I think streaming rom-coms are doing a lot of good for the genre. I think their casting choices are so smart.
Yeah.
And I love seeing like the, I love seeing modern elements incorporated into rom-coms. Like I loved opening it on stories and how even that connects back like in the end where it's like in the stories, Jenny Slate's character and her ex-boyfriend Noah were doing all this fitness stuff. And in the end, he was like, you didn't even like any of that. You know, and she was, and it's like, you were bored with me. And I, it was like, yeah, like that stuff I really like. Yeah. I think there was, I think, tonally there was just some stuff that was off. And then also just something that I thought was odd was like the pace and the editing was so fast in this way that was just odd to me. Like even the scenes, the way they were cut was like so quick that it was just odd. It was just odd. But and I
there's a really crazy edit at the end where it was like a cut where he was like he's with Gina Rodriguez and then it was like it felt like a cut he was checking out and then cut he was on the plane and it was like did we need that scene where he was checking out of the hotel? It was like a weird.
It feels like they shot like a 4-hour movie and then we're like. Got to chop, 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 chop. Yeah. Like that scene where they were eating the keto quiches, I was like, it was crazy. I was like, we were there for so long and there was so much. It was odd. I was just, I haven't seen that in a movie in a long time where I'm just like, God,
it was
everything
kind of
was
like
just
a
like chopped.
One shot too as well.
Yeah.
And you're right. You're it was oddly lit. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was very stark. That was a stark. The pie shop was definitely a studio. Like they shot that
and
on
in
like
a way,
a,
yeah, like on
studio,
a lot.
On a lot, yeah.
Yeah. And in a way that I feel like is typically reserved for like horror. Like what? Okay. I just watched a horror movie. Oh, on it. Okay. This is so messed up. It reminded me of the lighting of the horror movie Teeth.
Oh my God.
I don't know what I'm thinking. I just watched Teeth recently and I was like, this tonally reminds me like too much. I don't know. But yeah, that's my last thought is that it wasn't a home run for me, but I do appreciate the ways in which streaming pushes the rom-com forward. And I do appreciate it creating roles for all of these very talented actors. And I think it's worth a watch just for the Suddenly Seymour set bit. And her relationship with the kid is cute.
A little but, weird.
It's not cute enough. We'll say that. It's not cute enough to be, it's, you can't give a child a ride home in your car with no context.
You can't. You cannot. You can give a child your phone to call their parent.
Yeah. There was a lot of, it was like, I was just honestly like a slightly uncomfortable amount of like adults interacting with minors. And it's no one's fault. It didn't feel comfy.
Yeah, so, you don't do that in real life. So
you just wouldn't and you couldn't and you shouldn't. And it was just it was odd. So on that note, let's move up to the trope counting segment. Okay, so let's hear. I got a big breakup. I love a big, it opens on this like conversation that's going so positive that you know someone's just about to get dumped. And that was Jenny Slate and Noah's character. The big plan, sort of the big agreement, it's typically the like, let's pretend to date to get our exes back together. But it was like, let's do X, Y, and Z to break up our exes. Breakup drinks. I love a good, we're breaking up and we're drunk. Set piece because I think that's honestly just incredibly relatable where I think dating brings up all these primal emotions that like none of us are prepared to handle. So I do love like a big like, well, the breakup's happened and we're gonna do drunk karaoke set piece. I wrote down perfect sexy circumstance. I don't think it ended up being so, but it was like, oh, we had to spend all this time together.
Yeah.
Breaking up our exes. And fortunately we spent a lot of time apart breaking up their exes. But yeah, you know, perfunctorily that is what happened. Dead parent trope. I do feel that Jenny Slate's.
Oh yeah.
I do feel like this was a bit of an egregious use of the trope where, it didn't feel quite effective or grounded or real. Specific dreams, you know, and Sally got her groove back. It's she wants to make furniture and in Fernie Sir Marshall, it's the Muppet. Van Helsing vampire show. In this, he wants to open a good nursing home, which honestly is like a really, it's if you have grandparents, which I'm sure we all do, you know this thing, and you've been to them and they're bad. And so that's really beautiful. And I do think that that is a really compelling element of the film and a redeeming quality. Ends in a wedding. instead of a slap, we have a punch, which I feel like counts.
Yes, I have that.
We got a big speech and we got a big reveal. Like, this is what we've been doing. We've been lying to you all. So that's what I have. Allie, what do you have?
I have quirky jobs. They both have quirky jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Peter works at a really horrible corporate retirement home. And there's like a really dark but kind of funny scene when it's like so... It's like, it started off so big and kind of like heightened comical, where like his boss is like, how can we cut money away from old people? How can we give them less real food to eat? And it's just really kind of like dark and cartoonish and funny. So he works at a retirement home and Emma works at an orthodontist office. I have Meet Cute crying in a stairwell. There's also this like really weird funny thing where like they try to smoke cigarettes and they both hate it.
That's really funny.
I forgot about that. I just have that in my notes.
Honestly, I literally had that during the pandemic. I was like kind of processing a breakup and pandemic was really traumatic. And I was like, I'm going to take up smoking. And I smoked a few cigarettes one night and I absolutely like almost gave myself a peptic ulcer and was like in bed the next day. Like I can't smoke cigarettes.
And you're like, oh, this is poison.
It's relatable. It's quirky.
I have a two times spontaneously breaking out into singing. One is karaoke and the other is when she's singing Little Shop of Horrors.
It's so good. I honestly just would love to watch that scene again. It's a great scene.
It's so good. Mia, you got to watch the movie. It's so good. Have you seen the movie?
I know. I need to. I don't even know. I know that I watched parts of it when I was a child and I just I know who's in it. I know I've seen it. I just don't remember what the whole story is. Like when the child was being eaten and bloody by the plant, I was like, I don't remember that. Maybe my parents didn't let me watch all of it now that I'm remembering.
He added that part in the movie. In this movie, I Want You Back.
It's not. Okay.
Yeah. Spoilers, Audrey doesn't die in the movie. In the real movie. Trevor is a kid that acts like an adult. Bless you.
You're so right.
I have, there's a trying on dress montage where she tries on dresses. Right. I have New York is a magical city just because they're doing a lot of fun things in New York. And it looks pretty and cool at times. I have like instead of looking across the dance floor, there's like a look across the wedding aisle where like Peter the wedding aisle at her and she like looks away. And then I have there's a big grand gesture on an airplane.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there was something of. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that's correct, Al. Yeah, that's the way to articulate it.
Maybe it's because they didn't show any scenes in the airport. It was just like a cut to.
Like, that's why it feels cheap, maybe. Like, maybe the. Yeah, like, honestly,
I only saw like 5 rows of the airplane. Like, I wanted to see like 20 rows. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know why it bothered me so much. There was something off about it. Yeah. And I wanted to see like a struggle. I want to see like her trying to put on her own and him trying to help. And then her being like, no, I actually want to put on my own. And then like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it just.
The metaphor was wrong. It was wrong.
The metaphor is off and not the healthiest version of it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. It is worth a watch. But it's just prepare yourself. And that takes us to 17 tropes. So high middle, not crazy. Okay, well now I think it's time to rate this rom-com. We here at PCLA Rom-Coms have an ever-changing list of top 5 rom-coms, and as of now, here are our top 5: The Best Man, When Harry Met Sally, Love and Basketball, The Wedding Singer, and 10 Things I Hate About You. So now, if we so choose today, we can put I Want You Back on that list. But we have to unanimously agree to vote off one of those other top five to replace it with. So what do we think? Does I Want You Back deserve a top on the spot five? Does I Want You Back deserve a spot on the top five list? And if so, who should it knock off? Allie, what do you think?
No, I don't think it deserves a spot on the top five. I think what it did portraying, like, social media, like modern love and social media, like some of its takes on that, I thought was really cool and refreshing. I thought some of the comedy was really great. I think though that it kind of, like we said earlier, I was missing more interaction between the two main characters, and they spend a lot of time away from each other. And I think it kind of hurt the end of the movie because the first half was so fun when they were coming together, and then it kind of lost steam because they, our two leads, didn't spend enough time together. And then the song I Want You Back by the Jackson 5, was that in the movie? Because it should have been.
I don't think it was. It should have been.
It really. I'm sure it was so expensive.
There's a great song from Haim called I Want You Back. Couldn't you have afforded Haim's I Want You Back?
Yeah, like there's, maybe
there's
that
like
one.
Quite a few songs called I Want You Back. Yeah, that's such a good song. I'm obsessed with that album. Something to Tell You. The album's called Something to Tell You. Yeah. Odd to have a. Such a prolific title, and no, I almost clocked them saying the title, but they didn't. They said something like different, mm-hmm. that I was like, oh, they've almost said it. Yeah, it's like they didn't say it. There wasn't the song. Yeah, you gotta have that. I'm in agreement, Allie. I think the casting was wonderful. I think the Sunley Seymour scene was hysterical, and I think the premise is very smart. And I just think they should have done a pretend to date trope. And I know,
yeah.
Look, who am I? I'm just a lady in a room. but
you're a lady
just,
in the room who has watched over 100 rom-coms.
I'm a lady in a room who's watched a rom-com in her room every week for the last 2 years. And I'd say I think it would have been served by a drive me crazy pretend to date motif. But what do I know? And I love Jenny Slate, and I love Charlie Day, and I love Junior Rodriguez. But what are you going to do? So, yeah, I think we're unanimous. It does not go on the list, and that is A-okay with us. But, now, but great. We love a streaming rom-com. We love what you've...
Yeah, keep them coming. We'll keep watching.
We'll watch them. We'll pay for the services, and we will watch them.
Yeah, you keep making them.
Believe you me. Keep making them.
Now I think it's time for a reality check. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices and the rom-coms we've just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. In this film, we see our main characters scrolling through their exes' Instagrams and keeping tabs on them. Now, is this something that me and Allie, do in real life? And if so, what are our philosophies on social media and breakups?
Oh my gosh. No,
I would never do this. I would never look at an ex's social media.
Who me? No, never.
I have self-control.
I have self-control. No. But on the whole, I do attempt. I don't think this is healthy either. I do attempt like a full, like, you do not exist vibe. Like I think I do the opposite, where I'm like, I cannot see you. If anyone tries to tell me something, I'm sort of like, do I need to know? Like, well, then I would stop with your story right there. So I go, it's not even scorched earth. It's just like, I feel like it's just easier for me. this probably isn't healthy. I just like, it's easier for me to do like a full kind of like block out situation. So in that way, I don't end up doing that. But I would say it's almost as unhealthy as tracking them, because I'm in a way I'm like, it's like massive compartmentalizing of like, oh, if I don't see you, you don't exist. So I don't know. That's my philosophy. It works for me, but it's, I don't know. Allie, what's yours?
I think that's probably right. I think my philosophy and my actions are different. I think I believe in your philosophy, Mia, where it's just, you know, cold, cut it out, you know, but that's not what I do. What I do is I leave you know, I don't block them from seeing my stuff. And so every mm-hmm. now and then, like, an ex will pop up, you know, as viewing my story. And it just gives me such, you know, a twisted, like, sense of, like, happiness where I'm like, yay.
You're curious.
And, you know, it's not healthy because then I'm like, well, I wonder what they're doing. And then I, you know, kind of like will go over and poke around a little bit on their social media. And it's not, you know, it doesn't feel good. Like afterwards, I don't feel good. And so,
right.
But I can't stop myself from like letting them see what I'm doing. And I really should. I think what you do is correct, where it's like, you just gotta.
I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's easier in the moment, but I do wonder if I'm like compartmentalizing in an unhealthy way where I'm just like, I can't see you.
Do you ever think one day you're going to snap and then you're going to like go on and then just like, just dive in, you know, and just look at like weeks and
fear.
Weeks and
it's
weeks.
Like also because I like looked at my high school into college boyfriend story and he posted about his girlfriend on Valentine's Day and I was genuinely like, that is wonderful. And like,
oh my God, you're sure, so strong.
Well, yeah, and I'm like, now I'm an adult, so maybe it's just been long enough. But I will say, in terms of looking at ex's Instagrams, me and my original ex follow each other. He posted like a lovely thing about his girlfriend. And I was like, they seem very well matched and happy. And I felt happy about it. So I guess it's like a good long-term thing, but I guess it has been a full, let me think, years wise. I can't even tell you. It's been actually 10 years. So maybe that is when I can sort of like every 10 years, I can kind of look at people's social. Maybe, I don't know.
That's probably a good philosophy.
Yeah, I guess I'm scorched earth until a decade is passed. And who's to say what's healthy? But that's I guess what I do.
But that's like, but that's honestly like the scorched earth policy is like what it used to be like before social media, you know?
Right. Like, you didn't have the...
You couldn't check up on people's, you know, daily activities. And so it would have just been easier to be in like, okay, bye. And now and there's like this weird kind of like tether that still exists.
Or like they're continuing on. Yeah, I sort of can't, my brain isn't like, doesn't want to like address that. But that's my current policy. I have a 10-year policy. And Allie, you're sort of like, I try not to, but I will. And I think a lot of people do. I will say when I talk to my friends, I do feel in the minority of my scorched earth vibe. And people are like, wow, that's really great. And I'm like, I actually don't think, I think it's in a different way. It's like, you know, I think it's unhealthy in a different way. But I will say it does feel like reality checks out in that. That is a huge element of breakups and like vibes that happen after breakups.
Yeah.
And I think after 10 years, then, it, you know, it can also be good and nice and you can
and
be happy.
Healing. Yeah.
So I do think reality checks out. But you guys, that's the pod. Thank you so much for listening. We have a new episode out every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by the lovely folks at Campfire Media.
And P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Ever wanted to hear the story of the time that Melissa Fumero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine's kid had a 2-hour-long tantrum that drove generations of their family to weep? Or maybe the story of SNL's Bobby Moynihan's kid, who found random pizza in a playground sandbox and ate it? If so, you should check out Why Mommy Drinks, a weekly comedy podcast where I, Betsy Stover, talk to interesting people like Richard Jefferson from the NBA or Rachel Bloom from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend about a time that their kids broke them down into a shell of their former selves or maybe even drove them to drink, but in a fun way. If you have kids, this show will make you feel less alone. And if you don't have kids, you're going to be so glad you don't have kids. Listen on Campfire Media, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Why Mommy Drinks.
Campfire.